Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast. Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Steve, my good man, how the devil are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm wonderful, my friend. I've had quite a quiet week, actually. Not a lot of exciting's been happening, I don't think. I did go to another gig since we last spoke, actually. I went to see Jerry Cinnamon. That was pretty great.
Nice.
Yeah, that was really cool. But aside from that, I've just been at home working. Have you had a good weekend and everything?
I had a good weekend, yeah. Very chill one with the family. And then just been at work. Very standard sort of week. Yeah. Really? Weekend, week. Just nice. Just been a good week.
Yeah, that's it. But we did have a weekend of racing.
We did.
Which was quite exciting, which we will. Should we just dive straight in today?
Let's go straight for it.
God, it's a weird one today. I'm a minute in and we're just going for it, Steve. Okay. I've forgotten the intro again. There we go. I'm Tim, he's Steve, and this is For the Love of MotoGP. Now, if you're new to MotoGP, guys, I don't always forget the intro, but sometimes I do, and that's just something we live with. But if you want to understand what the hell we're banging on about in this show, and you don't know, jump back and check out our Introduction to MotoGP show. It will tell you everything you need to know to start enjoying the sport that we all love. So, Steve, this week, I think we kind of... There is news and stuff to talk about.
There is.
It's all sort of intertwined with what happened in the races.
It is, yeah. It's one big kind of amalgamation of just what happened from start to finish at the weekend. It's a very bizarre situation where you can kind of blend everything in.
Yes.
There's no break to it. It's a bizarre one, but a good weekend of racing still.
Yes, certainly. So rather than do the news section up top, Steve, we will probably just dive into our review and stuff today. It's a very different format, Steve.
It is. It doesn't feel right.
No, it's an odd one, but we'll dive straight in. But before we do, I do just want to apologise to anyone listening if you thought the way Steve and I spoke about Dean Bertavignales last week... We've had a couple of messages to say that people thought we were being disrespectful about it. And a lot of that was because it wasn't the first thing we talked about. We kept saying it was a slow news week. And we kind of just chit-chatted away like we often do. We discussed music, films, F1. Before we really got into talking about Dean Bertavignales. And I can see why people find that disrespectful. And at the time, I just didn't realise that. So I can only apologise for that, guys. My thought process of the show was that I didn't want to profit in any way, be it by downloads, clicks, likes or comments, by the death of a teenager. It seemed weird to me. It seemed weird to spend too much time discussing it. I mean, we need to talk about it happening, but I didn't want to dive into it too much because it felt disrespectful towards Dean, towards then his family and stuff as well. And I'd seen some outlets really hammering out the stories about it, and it left me with a bad taste in my mouth. So that's why we didn't choose to dive into it too much. But I understand how people can have a different opinion to me and view things differently. So thank you for anyone that got in touch about it and commented on it. And hopefully we won't have to talk about anything like that again. But if we do, we'll try and cover it in a better way.
Yes. Yeah, we will. So apologies for if we caused any offence anywhere.
Yes. And with that out of the way, Steve, let's get diving straight in then. We'll cover the top five finishers in Moto 3 and Moto 2, and there will be a discussion on what the Moto 3 race as a whole, really, and the events that went on within that. And then we will dive into our full MotoGP race review.
Let's go for it, buddy.
Okay, so with Moto 3, Steve, best to run through the top five finishers, do you think, and then maybe go from there?
I think so. Yeah, let's do it that way, and then we can pick apart the events of that race.
Yes, okay, that sounds like a good plan. So then, fifth place was Dennis Onchu, fourth place, Jaime Massia, third place was John McPhee, second place, Dennis Foggia, and first, for his first podium and first win in Moto 3 was Izan Guevara. Wait, has he had a podium already? Oh, I don't know. I think that might have been his first, but now I'm confused myself.
I'm questioning it now. I'm not sure.
No, I think it was his first. It was definitely his first win. We'll go with his first win, certainly. Yes. And actually, quite an embarrassing win, Steve.
It was, yes. So it was after the incident.
Let's go through the story of the race, yeah, and then we can come back easier. To it, can't we?
That would be easy. I was trying to think of a way to do it without spoiling it, and then realised it's nearly impossible.
Yes, exactly. So we saw the race started off as a typical Moto3 race, really. That back straight meant the slipstreaming was just constant, on and on. No one could really break a gap. It was quite exciting, but the bumps and stuff on the track, which again we'll come to, were causing some... it stopped anyone being able to get a good breakaway, really. And then seven laps into the race, was it? More than that. I haven't put how many laps it was, which is annoying. I think it was seven laps into the race.
I think it was about seven or eight laps in.
Philip Salach had a big crash, which brought out the red flag.
Yes.
The race was stopped. It looked quite concerning for a little while, but he was carried off the track, and as far as I'm aware, is okay. The race restarted then after a short break as a five-lap dash. But in two laps into this five-lap dash, we got another one of the most terrifying crashes we've seen in Moto3.
Oh, it was insane. Watching it, it took me a while to process it, just what we'd seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just the events and how it led up to it. It was instant.
Yes.
Watching it from the telly, we saw the riders coming out of the corner at the back straight. And then everything looked normal.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was normal.
Yeah, everything looked absolutely perfectly normal. And then we just had carnage.
Yeah, exactly. It was two riders up in the air, Pedro Acosta smashing into a barrier. It was all quite nasty. But essentially, it was started when Dennis Onchu overtook Jeremy Alcoba.
Yeah.
He then swiped across the nose of Jeremy Alcoba. And I've heard people say it was to break the slipstream, but I think it was to try and line himself up for the corner, essentially, to get to the right place of the track. But he just cut it too close. He wiped out Jeremy Alcoba's front wheel. Alcoba went tumbling down the track. His bike did that very Moto3 thing where it just span and turned into a ramp. A ramp that both Acosta and Minho crashed into. Acosta, huge air, and came back down and slammed into the barrier, but thankfully hit it at the kind of angle where he then just slid along the barrier.
Bounced off it, just glanced in blow, luckily.
Yes, very luckily. And Minho went off in the other direction.
Yes.
But again, huge air, slamming down onto the tarmac, and incredibly, both guys within seconds were standing and up on their feet, and Jeremy Alcoba got up, and there was just this like shocked looks around everyone. It was scary. But everyone walked away, thankfully.
That's the main thing. After like the events recently in this year, they're lucky. I mean, they used 8¾ of their 9 lives.
Yeah, quite.
They really did. This could have been a very, very different outcome.
Yes, certainly.
I think actually watching the replays on the telly on BT Sports Checkered Flag Show, when Neil Hodgson did his slow-mo bits and they're sort of pulling across and looking at the different aspects of the crash, they're really lucky that bike was actually belly pan on.
Okay.
If it had turned 180,
it would have almost been a dead stop, and then they're just up over been the ramp. Yeah.
There would have been actually no ramp for them to actually take off. So realistically, it is quite lucky.
Isn't it scary that it's lucky though? Like that the event, that how it played out, and like that's the lucky way of it happening.
Yeah. I tried to do a quick bit of mass and measurement. Cause watching it in slow-mo, you got the different camera angles. Because on the telly, we saw the behind view looking at the guys from the back.
Yeah.
In the replays, you had the helicopter view.
Okay.
So you could appreciate just how far they travelled. And when you saw it from that angle, it just got even more terrifying.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. That was really scary.
I mean, Acosta, where he just bounced off the grass and then into the barrier, just carried on.
Yeah.
And went across more tarmac. And I was trying to work out the distance, how far they flew. But it was too quick, even in slow-mo.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite get the marker and it was off the screen. Such a long way.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. And I mean, thankfully he did Karen sliding. It means that not a lot of energy was dissipated against the barrier. It really was just the glancing blow, and then the energy can just dissipate as he just slides to a halt.
That's it, yeah. And luckily he landed on grass.
Yeah.
I mean, Minya wasn't quite so lucky, but then he didn't gather quite as much air. I thought he did to start with, but then you see Acosta hit the back.
Yeah.
And it's like, Jesus Christ, parachute.
Yeah, it was properly scary stuff.
It was nuts. But that sort of set the tone of conversation.
Well, then that was the race, wasn't it? Like, some weird stuff happened. There was a lot of you seeing team bosses talking to stewards and Dorna representatives. Mm. And we didn't really know what was going on at the time. No. There was a lot of talk, are they just going to cancel the race? What's going to happen? And so we were only two laps in, and this was the five-lap restart. They didn't have time to run another five-lap race.
No.
And it turns out in Moto3, as we was explained on the broadcast, that a Moto3 race can only be awarded points if it was at least five laps.
Yeah.
So it has to be at least five laps. But they didn't have time to run another five laps. So then they did a weird thing where they decided that the two-lap dash that they had done was just scrap that. None of that matters at all. It's null and void. But the results from the seven-lap race initially is what stands at full points.
Yeah, full points.
Which I sort of struggled with in a way.
I think a lot of people struggle with, mate. Because like you said, going back slightly, we've seen team bosses literally running down pit lane with a rule book in their hands to try and work out what the hell was going on. They cut back to the results of the first race, and they were like commentators were speculating, is it going to be half points? Is it going to be...
Which would make more sense to me. I'd have been probably quite happy with it being half points.
Yeah. It was just a weird thing. And then getting back to like the race winner, I was in Ivan...
Izan Guevara. Yeah, Izan Guevara, who in that two-lap dash, his bike broke down.
Yes.
So he was leading the race on the before the red flag, and then his rear shock collapsed. So he was out, and he stormed into his garage, started throwing shit around, smashing his chair, smashing everything in there. And then they realised that the second race had been red flagged, and then they realised he was the winner.
Yep.
And it was just this very embarrassing moment. It went from him just raging to him like quite sheepishly like hugging the team, being oh guys.
it's just a bizarre scenario that I don't ever think we've seen before.
No. But maybe we have. There's a rule that explains what to do in this situation, and that rule was give full points to the first race.
It must have happened at some point.
It's happened at some point, and there wouldn't be a rule.
I just can't remember it.
Yeah,
that is the trouble. It's but like a one-off. So far, well, not even that far, that long ago, that I just can't remember it.
Yeah.
But it's such a bizarre situation to be sort of faced with.
Yeah, I just find it weird that full points were awarded for a seven-lap race, but a race can't actually be called a race after just seven laps because it's got to be two-thirds distance in Moto3.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
So I don't really understand how it wasn't half points. Like, there's no way in my head they could have restarted that race after two red flags and that terrifying incident, and obviously the events that we've witnessed over the last year. There's no way they could restart the race.
No, but well, someone threw an idea out of actually rerunning the race or a shorter race after Moto2. At the end of the day.
Yeah, I heard that. The counter to that seems to be that actually a lot of teams, riders, pit crew have got flights home.
Yeah.
So they need to be packing down to get their flights home, otherwise they wouldn't have had time to do it.
No.
So it wasn't feasible to do that. So I don't mind the fact that they went back. I think it makes sense. Maybe go to the longer one, but not full points. I find full points quite uncomfortable. Full stop.
Bit bizarre, but we don't make the rules.
Yeah. I'm just also a bit uncomfortable that the idea that they had this two-lap race in which three guys nearly got really hurt and one guy received a 2-race ban,
yes,
actually on paper didn't happen. It officially didn't happen.
No, it's just been written off.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
His punishment.
Apart from the punishment.
It's bizarre. It's a situation that is going to be talked about a lot.
Yeah.
I think if you bounce between any podcast, you're going to hear it discussed in depth.
Yeah.
And a lot more people are a lot more savvy than us are going to really pick it apart.
Yes, certainly.
But it doesn't take away from the fact that these guys are bloody lucky.
So lucky. Yeah. And like we say, Dennis Onchu, for his part in this, which was weaving on the straight, has got a 2-race ban.
Yeah, which, is, in my opinion, is right and good.
It's an interesting one, isn't it, this? Because I certainly agree with you. I think the ban is necessary.
Yes.
And I think the punishment, I agree with the punishment completely, but I have a couple of issues with it as a whole. I sort of feel like Dennis Onchu has been punished for the outcome of his move and not for the move itself.
Yeah.
And we really shouldn't be punishing the consequences of actions. You should be punishing the actions. Because would he have been punished if he'd just rubbed up against Alcoba? No one had gone down and no one would have been hurt. I can't imagine he would have done. I imagine there were guys weaving up and down the straight anyway. And I don't know this. I've not rewatched the race, but we do know they were told they weren't allowed to.
I don't know, it's a hard one to speculate on, but I think he probably would have been punished, but not as severely. I think he probably may have, if let's say just two riders went down, there was no air, no one caught, you know, there was no big crash like we saw, just two guys spun out. Let's say he ran up the back wheel of the guy who, and then went down. They both went their own separate ways. Just Mina went off one way.
Yeah.
Onchu went off the other. He might have got a one-race ban.
But then I think that's a joke. I think because, again, you're punishing the consequences of his actions, and I think it's a joke. I think the stewards have been very, very slow to react to this problem with weaving down the straight.
Absolutely.
Very slow to react to people dawdling on the racing line, and yet Onchu gets the absolute book thrown at him. They've not reacted like this ever to any of the Moto3 guys that have been fucking about. And now, all of a sudden, because of recent events, certainly, they've changed their ruling and stuff. And if this is the new precedent that they're going to throw down at us, then happy days. I'm very on board with the stewards really getting on it and being like, dawdling on the racing line, 2-race ban.
Yep.
You know, weaving down the straight, no matter whether you hit anyone or not, if you're weaving down the straight, 2-race ban. I'm on board with this as long as that is the precedent that's going
to
be set.
That has to be the benchmark from now on.
But I'm confident, couldn't even speak then, I was getting so emotional. I'm confident that it won't be, that's not going to be the benchmark.
No.
It's the stewards have been so bad with consistent enforcement of the rules that I can't see them improving now. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully they will.
I think the only way we're going to know is when we see another incident.
Well, it doesn't even need to be an incident, does it? Like we say, just someone weaving, someone dawdling.
Well, that's what I mean. Just something, something along that line. Just someone dawdling, being crazy, swerving, cutting across someone's nose. They have now got to back that up.
Yes.
What they've done this weekend has to now be the absolute last nail.
Yeah, it's got to be the minimum. The minimum punishment and of what the stewards are doing has to be these kind of rules that they're enforcing now.
This has to be it. From now on, we've seen them slow to react this year. We've seen a lot of stuff going on, a lot of safety issues this year. This has now got to be the precedent. They cannot change now. If they come, let's say we have something similar in the next race with the same outcome, everyone walks away, they have got to put out the same kind of punishment. If they turn around and go, 2-place grid penalty.
Yeah, exactly.
There will be uproar.
And that's what we've seen before, hasn't it? Yeah. Just the fuck about. And, like, you know, punishing one rider one week for doing something, but not punishing a different rider the next week for doing the same thing. And then even when they do, like you say, sometimes it's a 3-place grid penalty, sometimes it's start from the pit lane. Like, it feels very strange. And maybe they've got a system that they're just not communicating very well with the fans.
Yeah, it could well be. I think by now, though, if after all we've seen this year, if that was the case, someone would have come out and said, right, this is what is happening. But it just hasn't happened that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm absolutely convinced that they will probably uphold what they're doing. But at the same time, that last bit of me is like, we've seen them so fickle this year.
Yeah, exactly.
That I just can't bring myself to fully trust them.
Yep, that's exactly where I'm at. I can't fully trust them at the moment. But hopefully we're
really
proved
hope
wrong.
We're wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
And I really do hope that this is now the benchmark. And if you come out next race at Misano and you piss about, you're gonna miss the last two races of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
That I really hope is now the benchmark. So,
and I mean, if you're a Dennis Foggia, if you're a Pedro Acosta, then who was the other first? Sergio Garcia. These guys. I mean, Sergio Garcia, unfortunately, is quite far out of the title now due to an injury he received in free practice. Yeah. So didn't actually could take part in the race. But I mean, mathematically, he's still there.
Yeah, he's in with the shout still.
Yeah, so if you're one of those front-running guys, like, you've got to be super careful now, because that's the title. But then those front-running guys aren't really the problem, are they? They're not the ones that are doing this so much.
No, it's the it's the cluster, it's the pack.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and that needs to be sorted out. But hopefully now we've got a wake-up call, yes. Should we call it that?
And I like what you say there about it being the pack as well, because I think that while these strict rules are super important, and they will help to make things safer as long as they're properly reinforced. I don't think this is actually the answer to this like crisis of young rider deaths that we're going through at the moment.
No, I think it could help.
It will help because it will make racing in a pack safer, but
it's not going to be the key to solving this.
That's it. Because as far as I can remember, none of the deaths this year have involved people swerving on the racing line or dawdling on the racing line. They're all down to the pack racing element of these small bikes. They're riders who have come off and been struck by other machines. And while, yes, having strict rules to stop machines being in the way and to reduce the danger of the pack racing, it won't stop these things happening completely.
It won't. But if it takes away that 1%,
then it's worth it. That's certainly worth it.
Yeah, it's the 1% they've gained, which they didn't have before.
Yeah, but it's still not the answer. That's the thing. We can't look at it like this is the answer to the problem. There has to be an answer somewhere else. This is helping, but it could be helping somewhere like 1% of cases. Probably more than 1%. It might be up to 50%.
I'm just using that as the minimum amount.
But it's still not going to fix the problem completely. So there still needs to be people smarter than you and I who are going to be looking at this and solving this issue that we've got.
Absolutely. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, this is just the start of that journey down the right path.
Yes, hopefully. And
from this onwards, although it doesn't bring back the guys we've lost, rest them, it's going to prevent or help to prevent any further consequences. And it is just MotoGP as a whole heading down the right road.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly it. Moto2 then, Steve. Moto2, the top five. Now, this was a much, much less eventful race.
Thank God.
Yes, but it still had its drama, Steve.
It did.
The top five looked like this. Hometown hero Cameron Bobier finishing in fifth, showing just what this guy can do when he knows a track.
Yeah, when he's on his home turf, he looked a completely different rider.
And I think this is probably the only circuit that we've raced at so far since he's been in the class that he's got a lot of experience around.
I would say so, yeah.
Was obviously Moto America, five-time Moto America champ or something. He did have a season in 125 GP.
He did, yes, that's true.
Back in the day, but that was well over a decade ago, as far as I'm aware. So it's been a long, long time since he's been on these worldwide and European circuits, so he hasn't had the time to learn them. But give him a track he knows and a track he's comfortable around,
he's off.
Yeah, and he looked good. He looked really good all race.
He looked like a seasoned Moto2 rider who had that thing under control.
Yeah, exactly. So I've got high hopes for Cambobier next year and moving forward in the Moto2 class.
Absolutely.
And, you know, maybe he will be that American that steps up into MotoGP eventually.
I love a good American rider. I think they're great. Really do. I miss Nicky so much.
Yeah. Speaking of it, we will get to this, but it was a very, very nice tribute from Marc Marquez to ride around with the Nicky Hayden flag on the cooldown lap. Fourth place in Moto2 then was Augusto Fernandez, once again just being great this season, and really, you know, proving everyone wrong that doubted him. He had quite a good start in Moto2 a couple of years ago and then sort of faded to nothing, but has signed for next year with Aki Ayo squad, so he's obviously going to be looking towards a title favourite next year.
Oh, hell yes.
Marco Bezzecchi finished third, once again, just scoring another podium this year.
Just keeping it there.
Just getting podiums. Yeah. He's quite a long way out of the points battle now, but is just consistently scoring podiums.
Yeah, he's going to have a big trophy cabinet this year.
Yeah, he will do.
It's nuts. I'd love to see some of these guys' collections.
Yeah, quite. What do you reckon? Do you reckon the VR46 Academy have got a trophy room?
Oh, they must
do. It's just full of just all the VR46 rider trophies.
Can you just imagine if Rossi's and everyone's that is in that camp is in one place?
Jeez.
Put together. Although if it was me, I'd want some at home.
Yeah, well, a lot of the time, at least this is true in Formula One. I don't know if it's true in MotoGP, but certain teams will say, no, actually, you can't have the trophy. We are keeping the trophy and we will get you a replica made. So no, the driver can take the replica home and the team keeps the trophy. And if it's like a big trophy, then they do get to keep them, like a Monaco trophy or something. Like the rider will, or the driver, every now and again, will be like, I actually really want that trophy. And I'll get it written into the contract and stuff.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But yeah, that would be an insane trophy room. Do we know some of these guys, like they keep some bikes?
Yeah.
They keep the leathers, they keep the helmets, they keep on display. It wouldn't be a room, really, would it? It'd probably be an entire house.
I mean, probably, I imagine, if there's, and there must be a kind of Valentino Rossi museum somewhere.
Oh, God,
like, yeah. I imagine it, mate. It'd be packed if you've got liveried bikes, every single one, leathers, every single one, helmets, every single one, all of the trophies, like that'd everything. Imagine it.
That would be nuts. I mean, if you even some collectors, I see, like the guys who collect the Mini Champs figurines.
Yeah.
The Rossi collection is nuts. I mean, I've got one helmet set behind me.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to expand on that, but I've seen guys like on YouTube where their collection is insane. And that's just like the small figurines that fill a cabinet. I'm thinking just like, my God, these guys, if they're all in one place, all these Academy riders, Rossi stuff, the collection must be worth millions.
Oh, well, really without must. A doubt, without a doubt, yeah.
I'd love to get just in there to have a look.
Imagine how much it's insured for.
I dread to think. You imagine being that insurance company. Right, I've got a project for you.
You're like, oh, fuck, no. Just no.
Send out a representative and that guy's going to come back grey as hell.
Yeah, exactly. But nah, not happening. We're not doing it.
Yeah, we can't insure this. A room full of one-offs. Yeah, right.
Second place in Moto2 then, Steve, was won Fabio Antonio, who we know will be stepping up to MotoGP next year.
I'm looking forward to that now.
Yeah, I think...
I was a little dubious to start with.
But he's just consistently there now, so...
I'm looking forward to his move next year.
Yeah, I am. But I tell you whose move I'm looking forward to even more next year, Steve.
Oh, yes.
And that is one Raul Fernandez, who won this race to win his seventh race in his rookie season, matching one Marc Marquez in the process. So Raul Fernandez next year could be absolutely astonishing. I just really hope the KTM is up to it next year, because the KTM team next year, if that bike is up to it, is one of the strongest lineups.
Oh, absolutely. You look at who they're going to have in there, it's just like nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the team. If they walk on a pitch, if it's football, you're like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, quite.
Although they might not have many titles between them, and you could be a multi-time champion, they just are strong.
Yeah, exactly.
Strong team.
I mean, that's a good point. How many titles have they got between them? Brad Binder's got one. Oliveira's got none at Grand Prix level.
Nope.
And it, either Raul Fernandez or Remy Gardner will come up with a title this year. So it will only be two titles between the four of them, but it's still a potent combination.
You don't have to be a multi-time champion to be a threat.
Exactly.
And to be a scare. So, yeah, it's going to be a strong one.
It really will be. But I did just mention Remy Gardner there, Steve, and he crashed out of this race for the first time this season. First time he's crashed out of a race. Only his second crash over the entire season. But this was a costly, costly crash.
This was, yes. Yeah, this has not done his title hopes any good at all.
Not at all. He, with Raul Fernandez winning and Remy Gardner scoring 0 points, the gap at the top is now just 9 points between Raul and Remy. And, you know, the form Raul Fernandez has been on, there's not really any way you can bet against him. Remy Gardner had a tear at the beginning of the season and then was just consistently scoring good points, good podiums. And that's how he was going to win this title.
Absolutely.
But with just 9 points behind him now, I'm not convinced he's going to do it, mate.
Great. This is what we love. This is why we love this sport. When this kind of thing happens, because you can't script it, like you say, two crashes, including this one for Remy over the course of the season. You look at some other people, they've had more than that in one weekend, but we'll get onto that.
Well, quite. In fact, 2.5 times that amount in one weekend.
We'll discuss that shortly.
Moto2 is properly hotting up now. It's going to be a good finish to the season.
It is. Yeah, that is definitely going to be a nail biter.
Yeah, and actually, on that note, Moto3 that we've just discussed is also closing right up.
It is tightening down.
With Pedro Acosta scoring less, I think he scored 8th place after the jigging about of the different race results. He scored 8th place, so he did score some points, but Dennis Foggia took a big chunk of points out of him, so I think there's only about 30 points in that now, and that was a 75-point lead at one point this year.
Yeah,
so
that was a good lead. I keep thinking, every time we talk about Moto3 now, I keep thinking about the second part of the race finish line.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God, why? Hang on. No, this is not right. They didn't finish there. And then I remember, oh, hang on, they switched back to the other one.
Yeah.
I keep doing it. I was talking to a chap at work today and I was like, oh, fuck, I just give up. Everyone was all right. That's the main thing.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
We leave it at that. Steve's brain can't handle it.
It's just too much going on.
Yeah.
Right, Steve, that covers Moto3, Moto2. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will dive into our full MotoGP race review.
Let's do it, buddy.
Hey, guys, bear with us one moment and we will be right back with you.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid. High amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Thank you for bearing with us there, guys. We are back, and we are back to dive straight in to our full MotoGP race review. So, Steve, bumpy track this weekend, man.
Didn't notice.
Did you have it on mute the whole time as well?
Like, Pretty much. Yeah, you couldn't really escape it, could you?
No.
For the MotoGP boys, really, that was the story of the weekend.
Yes, certainly.
To the point where some of the riders were actually calling for the race to be abandoned.
Yeah.
One in particular.
Is this Aleix Espargaró?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very vocal, wasn't he? And a few others. Bastianini said, you know, if enough of us went, I wouldn't race either. But there's some people that are going to race. And if enough of them are, we have to race.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, track times were down, although they were still high. They were down compared to what they have been in the past.
Well, they did say on the broadcast, didn't they, actually, that you can clearly see that the track has been deteriorating in quality over the 10 years, whatever it is, since we've been there. It's not been 10 years yet. Eight years we've been there. Because the lap records are all set in 2014.
Yeah.
And they've never been bested. And the bikes are faster now than they were in 2014. The Michelins are faster than the Bridgestones were in 2014. And yet they can't best that 2014 time by Marquez.
No. It shows you the downgrade or the deprivation or whatever it is, however you say it, of the track. So
yeah.
And they are calling for a resurface or they will not go back.
Yeah, and they want turns 1 to 10 resurfaced, yeah, don't they, as a bare
That's
minimum.
That's the twisty bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Twisty set, which is understandable, because when you looked at some of the bumps on the telly, my God.
Well, there was that terrifying, was it an FP2 bit with Johan Mir, just tipping into a corner and going over a couple of bumps and just like bucking Bronco, the bike. It was scary.
It did look insane. And not just the bumps, but like the water drain off.
Mm-hmm.
Watching the rain in FP2, Friday's practice.
I can't remember which one was soaking wet, but it was one of them. I think FP1 was soaked, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember. Well, there's so much happened now, I can't remember the
exactly.
details. But anyway, I was watching it back on a replay, and there were actually puddles sitting inside of the track on the racing line.
Yeah.
And we're not just talking a little bit. These were big fucking puddles.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is right on the racing line. This is dangerous as hell.
It's scary stuff, mate. And for such an amazing looking circuit, it's just a shame. Because it's the soil underneath is the problem.
Yeah.
The soil doesn't drain very well. And it's also, it kind of subsides and bits of the track are subsiding, whereas others aren't, which is what's creating the bumps. It's not just all syncing evenly. So it's a big, big problem. And the problem is they could rip the whole thing up and resurface it, but it's not been a decade since it was built, man. Like, this is now a regular, probably every 5 years, you're going to have to tear the whole thing up and redo it. And that's an expensive fucking endeavor,
for
mate.
For a circuit like that, I mean, my God.
For any circuit, man. Yeah.
That is not a quick overnight job.
No, exactly. And we saw Bruneau has left the calendar for that reason. They couldn't afford to resurface up to MotoGP standard, so MotoGP doesn't go there now.
No, I'm sure they'll do something about it. I mean, we've seen the track skimmers. What was it, Mugello?
Well, I mean, we saw them at COTA. We've seen them at COTA.
So whether they go down that road, just skim it and maybe just resurface a patch.
But they can't. It's a full resurface, is what the riders are saying. Turns 1 to 10 needs to be a full resurface, or they're not going back. Part of me... sort of in this weird way hopes they don't resurface, because I'd love to see a good strike action from the riders. I think it would be great.
Yeah, that did go through my head. I was I'd love to see what they do.
Yeah, I would. I think it'd be interesting.
But then where would we go? We need a North American round.
Yeah, exactly.
We really do. And the guys were discussing this on the BT Sport commentary. They're like, you could go to Laguna, but there's work that needs doing there.
Yeah, you can't go to Laguna anymore. Laguna, since it was dropped off, it's too small. The paddock's too small. And actually, a lot of the barriers are too close now. The speed of the bikes and stuff. And it's in the middle of a national park, so you can't expand it.
No, exactly. That is what it is. It's a shame, because I love Laguna.
Mm-hmm.
My God, the corkscrew. What we've seen there in the past.
But it's funny now, because when you see the aerial shots of COTA, it looks like the aerial shots of a lot of other American circuits with just patchwork of asphalt and stuff.
Here, bits there.
And we see it on a lot of national circuits in the UK as well, weird patchworks and stuff. But it is strange to see COTA like that. Like, because COTA, I just still in my heyday, it's the first couple of years, it's just this like bowling alley smooth tracks, stunning. Yeah, like,
the first two,
everyone
three
loved
years,
it.
It just looked. One thing I did notice, striking difference, is when you look back at old pictures, the colour change.
Yes.
Of the surface tarmac.
A lot of it was resurfaced multiple times as well. Yeah. I think corners 1 to 10 maybe has already been resurfaced, and it was just a shit job.
Yeah, just not up to par.
Much like the Silverstone resurfaced job.
Yes, yeah, that debacle. I really hope they do something. I like COTA. I like the setup. I like the fact we go there. I know a lot of people that I spoke to like Texas as a whole. They like the whole thing, like just going there to visit the city and the surrounding area. I hope they do something.
Yes, certainly.
Because I really, as much as like you say, I want to see a bit of strike action. You know, picket line outside, we're not doing it.
Yeah, exactly. The massive socialist in me would love that.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, it's COTA. I just want to see how many times Marquez could win there.
Oh, mate. He's just an incredible human being, isn't he?
Just realised what I did there.
That's fine, Steve. We're going to get into it anyway. So that's pretty much the bumps, wasn't it? The bumps are really what made this weekend.
There's some other. I watched some of I think it was turn 11. My God. Scary as hell.
Yeah.
Watching the wiggles as they dropped out. Ooh.
Yes.
Gives me heebie-jeebies thinking about it. I was more on edge of my seat, worried for the safety, than I was about what was happening to the race.
Well, that's because, to be fair, Steve, the race wasn't actually all that exciting.
It wasn't a blinder, no. And I think a lot of that is due to what the track surface was like.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the bumps meant that you couldn't really get off the racing line.
You couldn't give it the beans. You could not give it all you wanted.
Exactly. You couldn't really race in a pack at all. Moto3 showed that you could race in a pack, but it's a different machine and stuff, isn't it?
It's a different entity completely.
So it spaced the riders out, pretty much, and that was sort of that for the race. So we'll go through the teams here, Steve. Aprilia, first team I want to talk about. Very quick one.
I'm not happy about their move first.
No, I know. It feels like a bit of a return to the norm, doesn't it?
It does.
But it also feels terrible to say that they're there, because they've had such a good season. But it's really good, I suppose, that we're saying Aprilia first. Oh, God, it's a terrible weekend
exactly.
for them.
It shows the change. It's not like, oh, for fuck's sake, here we go again.
Yeah, talk exactly. About
them. Move on.
Yep.
Now we're disappointed they're there. So it shows, like you say, it shows the change, how far they've come this season.
Yeah, exactly. Maverick Vinales didn't race for obvious reasons.
No.
He's obviously off on compassionate leave at the moment. I assume he'll be back for Misano in a couple of weeks' time.
I think so. I think he'll head back for Misano. If he doesn't, everyone will completely understand.
Certainly.
Did not start the race.
No.
Did not.
Wasn't in attendance at all.
No.
Aleix Espargaró then qualified 19th, crashed out of the race. A very, very poor weekend for Aleix.
Absolute shocker. I like Aleix. I like what he's done this year, how far he's come. But this, he did not get on well here.
No, not at all.
He really did not. We have 5 crashes in total over the weekend. Like we've already mentioned, he was one of the riders calling for the whole race to be scrapped.
Yeah.
So he was not a happy bunny.
No, not happy at all. And that's sort of just it, isn't it, really? He had a shit weekend. He hated all of it. And it has been very clear that he will not be racing again in COTA unless they make the changes.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what he does next year. He will probably... I would imagine he'd be made to fly there, but he'd probably just sit like a sulking child on the plane. New.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. We know he's up for a good picket line, so come on, Aloysius.
So then KTM are the next factory, Steve. It's just KTM are just it's not a good year, is it? They had a shit start to the year, couple of cracking results in the early or the late part of the first half, and then it's just been awful since, really. If it wasn't for Brad Binder just being Brad, this year would be a fucking terrible, terrible year for them.
It would be a write-off. It really would. I mean, you've got two guys who are going to be making way.
Yep, so Dino Petrucci qualifying in 21st, finishing in 18th in the race, and Ike Lecuona qualified 17th, finished 16th in the race. So no points for Tech 3 at all.
No, nothing. Those guys are obviously out of rides. We know Petrucci's going to ride the Dakar.
Yeah, Dakar for a full factory backed KTM squad. He'll be one of the seven factory KTM riders or whatever it is they have over there.
Same number. But yeah, these guys are moving off. But coming on to like the full factory team, they are being rescued by one man.
They really are. And that's not to say Miguel Oliveira, he is doing terribly now, but he had the win and it was a legitimate win. I think Brad Binder's win was very fortuitous this year.
Yeah.
Oliveira's win was a legitimate win. But he qualified 18th, Oliveira, this is, and finished the race in 11th. It's a better race than we've seen in recent weeks from him, but that's not saying a lot, and it's still pretty shit, really, is when you look at the weekend as a whole.
Yeah, when you look at like his pace overall, his qualifying overall, his race position, not bad, considering.
I mean, he got points, didn't he, which is nice. And the, you know, when he was on the Tech 3 KTM, that would have been a really good race, but he's on the full factory squad, he's a multiple race winner now, and something has just not been right since he broke his hand.
No, definitely not. So, I don't know, I'm just hoping that it's just a combination of a few tweaks to the bike, maybe a bit of recovery still from the hands, and I don't know, I'm uncertain. I really am uncertain.
Yes. I assume his contract runs till the end of next year, doesn't it? So yeah, it's not so like they're going to be booting him out soon. But, you know, if either one of these factory boys doesn't perform well next year, and if Raul Fernandez just comes in and really performs, one of them, well, not one of them, Brad Binder's got a 5-year contract, whatever it is, Oliveira's seat is at risk.
Yeah, he's got to perform.
But he's also a rider that's in demand, isn't he? So like, it's not like he wouldn't get a ride elsewhere.
Yeah, he will pick up a seat. And we know there's going to be more seats available next year. So
it's interesting, though, isn't it, when you think of all the young riders at the moment, and I'm including Brad and Miguel in this, where would they go? Because I feel like every team has got their lineup of young riders now. The factory Yamaha squad's sewn up for a while, isn't it?
Yep.
Surely. Marc Marquez is at Honda, and then whoever they've got alongside him at the time. Suzuki, I mean, they're going to try their hardest to keep Mir. Will they want Rins? Maybe, maybe not. But like Ducati, they've got so much talent now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not getting... You're going to be hard-pressed to jump onto another factory bike at this point.
Yeah. Rides are going to become harder to come by. In the next few years, you are going to have to perform week in, week out.
Yeah.
Even if you're not a front runner, you're going to have to either A, improve your time or improve your result or show constant progression.
And it has to be, because not only is this a stacked talent field, MotoGP field, but Moto2 is stacked.
Exactly.
Moto3 is stacked with talent. So every year you've got two or three guys coming up from nowhere being like, we're having your rides.
Yeah.
Like,
and
so
it's going to be
so tough at the moment,
competitive,
man,
as hell.
It's already there, and it's the mental thing, mate. There's like, it's not like even when we first started doing the show, we had like the Loris Bazzes, we had like the third tier Ducati bikes, there was a Eugene Laverty. Like, there were guys on there that were fast riders, but not fast MotoGP riders.
No. There were guys there that...
Lorenzo Savadori is probably the only one that I could name this year that was a fast rider, but not at the same level as everyone else.
No, apart really from the standing guys.
Yeah.
The guys who are coming to like replace injuries or absentees. No.
Ike Lecuona maybe, but he had a big uptick in
even
form.
Even Ike has had good results and has sort of shown his worth.
Yeah.
You know, we spoke about him, was at a race or two ago, we were saying he really did do his chances of securing a ride for next year the world of good. It's just, you haven't now got to be competitive on the track. You've got to be competitive with yourself to prove that you should be there.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be that standout guy every week.
Yeah, I think it's the most competitive MotoGP field that I've ever seen.
It's going to get worse as well. It's going to get better.
Yes, certainly.
But worse for the riders. Just keep securing these rides.
Yeah. I mean, I'd argue, having my limited knowledge of like the 500s and stuff, but this might be the most talent field that the Premier class has ever been.
Absolutely. I completely agree. It really is. And it is just going to keep on getting better and better.
Yeah.
We say this all the time. I know we repeat ourselves, but damn, it's going to get good. Every year.
Suzuki next then, Steve.
Yes.
Alex Rins will go with first here. Qualified 7th, finished the race in 4th, Steve.
He did.
That meant involved in keeping 2 tyres on the track at all times and getting it across the line without scraping your leathers.
Do you reckon he stopped and had a look and was like, I'm awake?
He's like, what the fuck? How did I finish this one, eh?
Yeah. Do you think at any point during this race, some of his mechanics were trawling through the spare parts going, what do you reckon? What's he going to break this week?
I really hope for the team dynamic that goes on in Suzuki that that's not the case, but I'd also die with laughter if it was.
Yeah, you know, these guys, as soon as he disappears off out the pit box on his bike, they're taking bets.
Yeah, exactly.
They're giving each other odds. Money's swapping hands. You know, if David A's on the phone, he's like, give me $50 or whatever it is on someone. I really do hope that's Ryan. I'm sorry. Sorry, Rims, for ripping it. But, mate, you have dropped it a lot.
Yeah. And this is a track, obviously, he's won around here before, so he goes very well around here. And I think a lot of why he was dropping it a lot is because he was putting that bike where it shouldn't be this year. He's just overriding and getting more out of the bike and being on the limit.
Yeah. We discussed this at length, didn't we? Just saying how much he was trying. And you can't knock his dedication for that. You know, you can't knock anyone who tries.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, in this sport, if you try too hard, the risks are going to outweigh the talent, to quote Mr. Stoner.
Yeah.
And
well, I think it was your ambition that outweighed your talent on that one.
Yeah. I got that slightly wrong, my bad. But you know what I mean. It's a really good result for him. We know he goes round here. He's the last winner here.
And that's why I think a lot of the reason he got this good result is because he wasn't overriding the bike.
No.
It's a track he's very good at, a track he didn't need to override the bike on. And it showed. I mean, he stayed on the bike and comprehensively beat his world champion teammate.
He did, yeah. But this is one of those tracks where I thought he was almost guaranteed to go down as soon as I saw the bumps.
With all the bumps and stuff, yeah. We do know that Suzuki is quite a sweet handling bike. Maybe Suzuki just dealt with the bumps better.
I think so. I think you're right. Just the combination of him being at a track he's won. One out, and the bike being, like you say, such a sweet handling bike. The combination of the two was just on his day.
Yes, certainly. And actually, that said, it's quite interesting that there was less crashes in the race, really, because of all the bumps.
I thought there was going to be a lot more. I thought there was going to be a hell of a lot more crashes.
Three guys went down, one of them remounted.
Yep. We'll get onto that one. I thought there was going to be a lot more. I thought a race pace, worn tyres. I thought, come the end of the race, we'll have a crash fest.
Yeah.
That was kind of what I was waiting for. I was sat on the edge of the seat.
Thought it was going to be the race of attrition at the end.
Yeah, I really did. I thought we were going to see like 14, 15 guys maybe finishing the race. Everyone guaranteed points, you know, carnage in the gravel traps. Hopefully everyone was going to be okay, but it didn't happen. I was quite pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Considering like the surface.
Imagine that when the 20 best motorcycle riders in the world can make it all the way around a track without falling off.
Exactly. Miracles do happen. You know.
So Johan Mir then is now statistically out of the fight for this championship.
He
can no longer defend his title.
He will be relinquishing that number.
Exactly. It will be gone at the end of the year. Not that he rode the number one plate, but he will not be world champion next year. He qualified 8th for this race and finished in 8th as well. Got through Q1 for his qualifying and then just didn't have the same pace as the front group going into the race.
Not at all.
And then at the end of the race, got a bit overzealous in the last lap, overtaking Jack Miller. He barged Miller out of the way, which was for 7th place.
Yes.
No, it would have been for 6th place.
Yes,
sorry. Barged Miller out of the way for 6th place, but also ran wide. So Bastianini came through from 8th to secure 6th.
All right, nice little poach there.
Mir finished 7th on the road. Miller finished 8th. However, Mir was given a 1-place grid penalty.
Yep.
Giving Miller 7th place in the end, Mir finishing 8th. I liked a lot, the argument on the cooldown lap between Mira and Miller.
That was one of the best things I've ever seen.
It was the helmet grab that did it for me. It was. I liked the shot of Mira just apologising, like, I'm sorry.
You could tell straight away he knew he was in trouble.
Yeah, and he'd stopped, actually. He did stop to wait for Jack to turn up. So he stopped and apologised, but Miller was having none of it. Miller, the feisty Australian that he is there, shouting and I'm sure swearing a lot at him. And it sort of looked like Miller was still apologising and getting ready to turn away. And Miller just grabbed the face protector part of his helmet and turned him back round and just carried on shouting at him. I was like, oh, this is...
It was the finger, it was the way he was holding him as well. It was like, you will look at me. Because let's face it, if someone pulls your helmet, you can't just like look up.
Yeah.
You've got no choice. You're looking for the blinkers. You're looking straight at him. And he's got him and the finger's going. And I was just like, he's going to hit him.
I really thought someone was going to throw punches. I thought it had come to that. Or one of them was just going to stack it off their stationary bike because they were unbalanced.
Imagine if that was Miller. Imagine at that moment he grabbed his helmet and then just fucked off the bike.
Just pulled him head first with him.
Just stacked in. Carnage. Somebody else has got to pick him up.
And that's when they really just start fighting.
Yeah, over the bikes. One's under it. One's on top. That's going for it.
Yeah, it was a bit much, but I did quite enjoy it. I'm glad no fists were thrown. I feel like if they'd started throwing hands, we wouldn't be able to laugh about it. But because they didn't, it's funny.
No. What a weekend.
Mir's number though, Steve. The 36.
Really nice.
In that Kevin Schwantz styling of Kevin Schwantz, obviously his 34. But just the same graphics and stuff. I thought that was really cool.
That was a nice touch. I really did enjoy that. Nice to see him there. And Schwantz was getting around the garages.
Schwantz was around the garages as well.
He was making himself known, should we say.
Yes.
He was there. I am here. He was everywhere. He was all over social media.
He has a lot to do with Circuit of America, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I'm not sure exactly what it is. I don't want to speculate what his job title is or what he does there, but he does have a lot to do.
I mean, we speculate on everything else, Steve. You could just speculate on this.
What should we call him?
King of Kota. No, that's Marquez.
He is the...
Lord Admiral of Kota.
Yes, right rear admiral.
The right rear admiral of Kota. There we go.
There he is. We're getting sued.
Speaking of people just around all over the paddock, Steve, I quite enjoyed that BT Sport showed us the 2019 clip of Guy Martin up and down the grid.
That was priceless, mate.
It was better than I remembered. Yes. I remembered it being mental, but watching it again and just seeing him and being like, oh my good Lord.
It was painful.
It really was quite painful. He was just... And you just text me, Guy Martin, cokehead. And it really felt like he'd taken something.
You watch his eyes.
He's just all over the place.
Yeah, and it was just the way, like, Neil Hodgson was asking questions, and obviously, as a presenter, draw his attention to him. You know, you've got a camera shoved in your face, you're having a conversation, you make eye contact.
Yeah,
like we
exactly.
Are now. But his Guy Martin was just, like, everywhere.
All over the... It's incredible. If anyone hasn't seen it, I think you can probably just YouTube Guy Martin, Kota 2019.
It was one of the best things. And the BT Sport guys were in the studio, and Hodgson actually looked uncomfortable.
Yes, with just the memory of it. Because even then, like when it showed you the shots of him from 2019, he's there just like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this guy?
Imagine in that scenario where you see someone you recognise, you know, and you're on the grid, you've got a TV camera with you, you think, right, this will be golden. We've got a bit of, you know, someone here we could talk to. Look, Guy Martin. And you get that.
Yeah.
I mean, no offence to Guy Martin. He is what he's done on TV. His bike racing career is cracking. You know,
it shows you how controlled he must be, though, when he does his own TV shows. Because he must be really focused. He seems erratic on those. But this was another level, man. It was so good. I loved it.
I loved the fact where he's like, I got my camera. I was like, yeah, like anyone's going to let you start taking pictures.
My favourite bit is when he's like, is there a rev limit? Is there a rev limit in the class then? And Neil Hodgson's like,
Yeah.
He's like, go on then, what is it? He's like, oh. And then he just goes off on another tangent.
The pause, right, too long. Right, what? I've got like, people. And it's the fact that he was aware of people like walking around because there's a lot going on. He's like, watch out. Nope. He's had a little pause. He's like, no, it's all good.
Yeah, I loved it, mate. I think it's great.
I sat there and I think I even like had my head, like my hands on my chair. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I sort of felt like that. It's like watching a car crash in slow motion.
One of the best moments from 2019.
Definitely.
Really was. And even now, that was going in the bloopers reel.
Yes, certainly. Ducati next, then, Steve.
Aye.
Let's start again with the Avintia boys here. Luca Marini qualified 9th, finished in 14th. Got through Q1.
Yeah, blasted it.
Yeah, and it has been improving, especially his one lap pace over qualifying.
Yeah, he is slowly getting to grips with that bike. You know, we know he was having some, should we say, fitment issues?
Yes.
At the start of the year.
Ergonomic issues.
Yeah, ergonomics. That's, I like that. Yeah, couldn't quite make himself fit, but it really feels like he's getting himself dialed into it now.
Yeah.
It's just taken him too long.
Yes.
For a season. All right, he's got a two-year contract, so he's going to be there next year. It's just taken him a long time to get used to that bike.
And, yeah, exactly.
But the results are starting to show.
They are starting to show now, thankfully. And we do know that he has secured himself current year machinery next year.
Yes.
As part of his contract with, I assume, the VR46 team. Oh. But I imagine the contract is with the VR46 team and Ducati to have that machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Andrea Bastianini then, Steve, his teammate, qualified 16th. Finished the race in 6th, though.
This dude is starting to come on strong.
Yeah, the future of Ducati's looking bright, man.
Just a bit, you know. Whoever sits at the top step of Ducati House is just probably sat there like, we got this golden.
Is that Domenicali? Is he in charge
I
of everything?
I think it's Domenicali, yeah. But whoever sits in that big chair is just smug as hell.
Yeah, quite. I think they all are at the moment, aren't they?
Any team boss must look at their lineup and think, this is strong.
Yeah, quite.
This is really strong.
When your weak links are currently appearing to be Johann Zarco and potentially Jack Miller... over the long run, like,
that's,
you know, you've got
a
fucking cracking lineup.
Yeah, but then that also poses the problem of, like, who do you drop? Because they're all good on their day.
That's the thing.
Every dog has its day, and we know Zarco is unstoppable on his day. Miller is unstoppable on his day.
Well, until Zarco wins a race, you're going to argue Zarco would be the first one to go.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. That is very true. They're so strong. The lineup is incredible.
It's really, really good. And that's why they're currently winning the team and constructor standings.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
But yeah, another great, great showing from Bastianini. It's a shame he's not going to be on a full factory machine next year, but he will be on a 2021 bike. And I listened to the race podcast the other day. Simon Patterson was saying on there that Ducati have gone for this like modular approach to their bikes now, where all of the parts from the 2022 bike will fit the 2019 bike and all of the bikes in between. So yes, Bastianini is going to have a 2021 engine next year and a 2021 chassis to start the year. All of the other bits of the bikes will all bolt onto that.
Nice, that's what you want.
So they can give him a 2022 chassis at some point if he's performing well. They can give him all the aero upgrades. They can, everything that they can give him except his engine, which obviously he's sealed into that engine for the year.
Couldn't ask for better.
Exactly. So actually, Ducati have done quite a good thing by just making all of their bikes
absolutely
fit each other at this point.
Yeah, talk about not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, exactly.
What a way to do it. Yeah, it's such a good idea. I mean, why waste it? You know, options.
Yes, and that's exactly it. Options and data.
Yeah, perfect. Couldn't ask for better. Ducati really have got... They're quite sickening, really, aren't they? The way they go about things, you know, they come up with radical ideas, pave the way, dupe everyone into doing crazy shit with the lunchbox.
But are still yet to win a championship because
of
it all.
This is the trouble. There is one thing eluding them. You know, you look at the budget and how much they spent.
Yeah.
And you start looking at the bills and you're starting to think,
although I'm sure they're still spending less than Honda, than Yamaha, than KTM.
Yeah.
I imagine they're spending a similar amount to Suzuki.
Probably.
And then I think Aprilia are spending the least out of everyone.
Yeah. I'd love to see the numbers, but we ain't never going to get them. So.
No, it's all speculation, isn't it? I think, well, we know that KTM's five-year investment was worth $250 million. So you'd say that's worth $50 million a year. And I'm sure Honda are putting in similar money to that. Yamaha are going to be putting in pretty similar money to that too.
All right. Numbers are big. This is not a cheap sport.
No, no, not at all. Did you see the video that came from MotoGP of Andrea Bastianini and Luca Marini riding bikes to Misano?
No. Oh, yes.
This,
sorry.
I missed it, obviously, during the Misano race. I only saw it the other day. Oh, my God. It's the most annoying advert. Two of the most sickeningly handsome men in the world that just look great, speaking Italian, riding through the Italian countryside on their cool bikes and then turning up at the grid. And Michele Pirro's there for some reason. But it's just like, oh, mate. I'm like, that's the lifestyle. I'm like, they are everything I aspire to be in life.
Yeah. I mean, I take any of that. Riding motorbikes across Italy.
Being sickeningly attractive.
Yeah, being sickeningly... Yeah, just, oh, fuck off.
No, I enjoyed that a lot. That really did tickle me. The Pramac squad then, Steve. Two more sickeningly attractive men here. Well, Johann Zarco's sickeningly sexy. Maybe not attractive as such, but just so good at everything. And French, so sexy.
Professional Frenchman.
Exactly. Zarco qualified sixth, but did not finish the race. He crashed out from ninth on lap five after having a pretty poor start and getting shuffled back.
Not the best weekend for him.
No, not at all. Jorge Martin, on the other hand, qualified fourth, finished the race in fifth, quietly going about his business and scoring another great result.
Yeah. Can't really fault the kid.
No, he was clearly on podium pace at one point, but had an issue where he ran on at, I can't remember what turn it was, which gave Bagnaia plenty of time to catch up. And then Martin didn't lose enough time after running off track, so had to do a long lap penalty.
Yeah, you have to lose a second, though. If you take a shortcut, you have to drop a second.
Yeah, which is very hard to judge. We spoke about this before. How the hell? Very easy in Formula One, because you just get your team to tell you in your ear. Very difficult in MotoGP.
Even the commentators were discussing it. Like, how do you judge this? The speed, the concentration, what's going on? You know, you could literally just take your hand off the throttle, flip it, and you, in that sport, you probably lost 4 seconds. You know, it, nuts. The easiest way is just give a long lap penalty, keep it pinned.
Yeah,
you know it's going to come.
Yeah, that's
and
exactly.
And then just take your punishment.
Yeah, exactly. But that meant, well, Bagnaia overtook him anyway, actually, before he'd taken the long lap penalty. And then when he took the long lap penalty, Rins got past as well, which is why he finished fifth in the end overall. A lot of conversation, though, Steve, as to whether the run-on turn, I can't remember what turn it was deliberate, whether it was a, oh, I've just got team orders to let Bagnaia through, Bagnaia's fighting for the title, I'm going to let him through, or whether it was, in fact, a genuine mistake.
I think it was genuine. I think looking at it, watching it back, I think it was genuine. It didn't look natural enough to be, right, I need to let him through, how can I make this look?
And it's just a weird idea. If they've told you to let him through, just let him through. Just roll off on the straight and let him by. You don't need to do the theatrics of nearly losing the front and like running off and then having to take a long lap. It would have been quicker and better, and he'd have not lost a point to Rins if this was the case, if he'd just rolled off on the straight.
Exactly. We'll get on to the perfect example.
We will get on to that in just one moment, Steve.
Yes. All in all, Jorge Martin, another cracker weekend.
Just an amazing rookie season, mate. Just an amazing rookie season. Like, we've said it before, we'll say it again, Ducati are just rubbing their hands with all the talent they've got floating around them right now.
Bloody hell. Good on them.
To the factory boys then, Steve. Jack Miller qualified 10th, finished the race in 7th. He had the pace all weekend, mate. First to second in almost every session, but then had a mare in qualifying and it really put him on the back foot.
Yeah, yeah, that really sucker punched him. That was his downfall this weekend. Never really recovered from that. Well, started to make up places, but then just dropped away.
Yeah, in the race, it certainly looked like he had the pace. He was on the hard tyre. Everyone else was on the soft. This is the rear tyre. And he was making places. He overtook his teammate in Bagnaia. Clearly had the legs on him at one point and looked really set to challenge for the win.
He did, yeah. There was talk on the telly of like maybe sometimes there is such a steep drop-off on that hard tyre towards the end of the race, whether that was part of his problem.
And I think it probably was part of his problem. Yeah. When you look at just the way he dropped off, he got to the point where he was starting to drop off again and Bagnaia was gaining on him. And like you've referenced earlier, you see Jack Miller look over his shoulder, see Bagnaia and just wave him through.
Yeah, literally put his hand up.
Yeah, just
like, here you go.
Wave him through and let him go, yeah.
But why not? If you know you're not going to win the title, help your mate out.
Exactly. It's important for Ducati to do so. And I bet if you help him out enough and he doesn't win the fucking title because you've helped him out, there's a juicy bonus coming your way as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it will definitely be there. You know, and it just does your chances of staying in that team if you're not performing.
Yeah, it does.
So much more. It just shows loyalty.
Yep, exactly.
And we know these guys like loyalty and dedication. So, you know, if he'd have stuck in front like someone did a few years ago and didn't let people buy.
Mapping 8.
Yes. What the fuck is Mapping 8? You know. You're not going to do yourself any good.
No, exactly.
No. So, yeah, all in all, disappointing weekend for Mr. Miller.
Yeah, it was. Especially, like we say, he was barged out of the way by Mir at the end there and lost 2 spots because of it. Regained one of those spots because of Mir's punishment, but still lost a spot. It's still a net loss.
Yeah, but provided us with some cracking entertainment at the end.
Exactly. That's what Jack Miller's good for, my friend.
He is. I was kind of hoping to see a shoey this weekend, but...
Alas.
Alas, yes.
So that brings us to his teammate in Pecco Bagnaia, Steve. Pecco qualified first, finished the race in third. Didn't have the pace all weekend.
No, he didn't. Not at all.
He was half a second off his teammate all through FP1, 2 and 3.
Yep.
And then in FP4... Jack. So I just gave him a tow, showed him the way around the track, showed him what he was doing, and happy days. It came to qualifying, and boom, Pecco had it nailed, got it on pole.
Yeah, that was the point, like I say, just follow Jack for a bit, and that just seemed to click something. Like, he just needed to find maybe just a different line somewhere.
I think through some of the bumpy stuff, I bet Jack just had a really nice line, and it, once he learned that line, happy days.
That was it, yeah. He just dialed it in, went for it, and yeah, 3 from 3 for podium. Podium? Pole positions.
Pole positions, yeah, and the first non-Marc Marquez pole position at COTA.
Yes, yeah, and the first, what was it, 3 consecutive...
pole positions for a Ducati since 2008.
Yeah, Casey Stoner, and 3 consecutive pole positions since Rossi.
For an Italian?
Yeah, for an Italian.
Okay.
I was trying to think what year then.
Oh, mate, I ain't got a fucking
clue. I think it was 2009. Anyway, I can't remember.
I don't think Rossi's had many pole positions full stop, let alone since
2009. No, no.
Yes, another great race result for Pecco, though. Lost points to Fabio in the championship.
He did, but he's still in with a shout. It's not done yet.
It's not done yet. 52 points back with 75 left on the table, so it's looking unlikely. But, you know, a win at Misano is probably looking good for Bagnaia. Quartararo has a bad one. Maybe it could bring it back.
He is...
We've then got Valencia and Portimao, so... Or Portimao, then Valencia, I suppose. Yeah.
He is starting to favour a Quartararo mistake.
It has to be a Quartararo mistake now. There's no way about it.
We love it, though, don't we? I had a load of scenarios just going through my head then. And it was just like, yeah, we need a Quartararo mistake. And you can't see it.
No, you can't see it happening now.
No, he looks too strong.
He's had his weird mishaps throughout the year, but since then he's too strong.
Yeah.
Let's take another quick break, Steve. When we come back, we will dive in to Yamaha and Honda for our last two factories to discuss. Okay, guys, bear with us one moment and we will be right back with you.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Thank you for bearing with us there, guys. We are back and we are going to cover Yamaha. Yamaha, I actually found it quite hard to choose the order for this week, Steve. And when you look at the overall performance of Yamaha and Honda, they probably shouldn't be in the order they are in. But there we go. They're in that order now.
That's what happens.
Exactly. So Yamaha then. Valentino Rossi. We'll start there. We'll get it over and done with quickly. Much like he probably feels this season should be. qualified 20th, finished the race in 15th. A single point, and that is about all I have to say on the map.
Yeah.
Yep. His teammate then, Andrea Dovizioso here, qualified 14th, raced to 13th. He's on a two-year-old machine. This is only his second race this year. I think it is his second, isn't
yeah,
it?
It's yeah, it's his second.
His second race this year, his second race on the Yamaha in over a decade, and he managed to beat Valentino Rossi.
Says a lot.
Yes, quite an impressive performance. Mm, and actually, absolutely. Do you know what we were saying about the other guys, like the Jake Dixons, the Garrett Gerloffs? You know, they didn't get up to speed straight away. Dovi is into the points, legitimately into the points, faster than I thought he was going to be. He's I know a couple of weeks ago I was saying that I was a bit bummed it was him and not Ika. But after this performance, and I think if the rest of the year ticks along like this, I'm really looking forward to seeing him on the current year bike next year.
Hell yes. Yeah. He is doing things I didn't think he would do.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone gave him much of a chance. And it's just, it shows what an insanely naturally talented rider he is.
Yeah, definitely.
To have a year off, hasn't ridden a Yamaha for, like you say, 10 years. And just come back and suddenly be outperforming people. There's some big names behind him.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, he beat two of the three 2021 Yamahas. He was the second Yamaha.
Yeah, that's nuts.
It's madness, man. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. He's going to be a very steady hand guiding the Yamaha development.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The factory team then, Frankie Morbidelli, Steve, qualified 13th, finished the race in 19th. He's clearly not recovered from his surgery at all. I mean, he was a long, long way off the pace by the end of the race. He just slowly went backwards. If you see the lap chart, he kind of starts in 13th, then drops to 14th for a couple of laps, then he's down to 16th for a few laps, then he's down to 19th, and, you know, like, it's just...
It was a steady, progressive curve, just not in the direction that you wanted.
No, exactly. And like we say, his lap times were slow, man. He was 3 or 4 seconds off the pace at the end of the race.
Yeah, but like you say, he must still be hurting.
Oh, he must be. Yeah,
so... We said it before, heal up, come back next year.
Exactly, it's all about next year. This is all prep for next year.
Just learning the bike.
Just get bike fitness back, get ready, see what this bike feels like, get ready for pre-season testing.
Absolutely.
Fabio Quartararo, then Steve, the guiding light of Yamaha at the moment.
The saviour.
Yes, quite there. Marc Marquez, you could say.
Yes, very.
Qualified second, finished in second. An impressive race from Quartararo. Didn't have the pace to stick with Marquez, and knew he didn't need to. As long as he was in front of Bagnaia, job done.
That's it, yeah. He beat the person he ultimately needs to beat.
It's feeling a lot like Lorenzo's 2015 title for me, where Lorenzo just built that lead towards the end. And at the end of the year, Danny Pedrosa was the faster rider, but Lorenzo knew he could just finish second in every single race.
Yeah,
and if Danny beat him, happy days, it doesn't matter. And Quartararo's doing the same thing now. He's just taking the points. And I mean, 2015, we were in the era of... No, not 2015, sorry, fucking idiot. 2012. I'm thinking of the 2012 title.
Yeah.
Not 2015 one, that was Rossi. But 2012, it was the era of the aliens, man. So, like, Lorenzo was pretty much guaranteed to be first or second every race.
Yeah, pretty much.
And Quartararo isn't guaranteed to be first or second every race, but he is doing everything he needs to do. And it's an amazing turnaround, isn't it? From this kid a year ago, who won two races and then just crumbled to the pressure of a title challenge. And this year has just looked unstoppable.
Whatever he's done, that sports therapist, psychologist, whatever it is, his mental state, just his work rate, just everything has clicked.
Yeah.
That he's just stars have aligned. He has come out and shown us what he could do. And I think you will get, I'll talk about it later, but you sent me a text after the race, which said a few things. And I was like, yeah, that's absolutely true.
I can't remember what my text said, actually.
We'll talk about it after we speak about it on there.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Oh, I do remember now, Steve. I'm there. That's fine then. Honda then, Steve. You've segued us nicely into that. Let's once again start with the satellite squad here.
Yeah.
Alex Marquez qualified 15th, race to 12th. Taka Nakagami qualified 5th.
Yeah.
Race to 17th. Nakagami crashed out from 6th on lap 2, which sent him to the very back. He remounted, but it was just a long, long race from there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another race Taka arguably had podium potential, and it never
just always
came
seems
through.
To slip through his grasp, doesn't it? Always looks so good. And I even sent someone from an LCR Honda a message to say, go on. I spoke to Fabio, I was like, go on, tell him to do it for us. Then he crashed. I was like, oh.
Yeah, not ideal for Taka. I don't know when his contract's up, but I imagine he's going to be sweating a little bit at the moment.
Yeah, I think he's contracted for next year, but he's got to do something.
Yeah.
He is becoming a little too crash happy, a little too fade happy.
Just not getting the results Honda want.
No. And we know they will reward loyalty. But ultimately, they want to see results. So at some point, they will start to question your ability and you will be out. So I really like Tacker. I just really hope he can start converting these good qualifying positions into some good race positions.
Yeah, definitely. Alex Marquez's teammate then, as I said, qualified 15th, finished the race in 12th.
Yeah.
A better weekend than his teammate just because of the finishing position, but still not great. Like, still these two boys best. Last year... I mean, Alex Marquez was on the podium. Taka Nakagami was a solid podium threat for much of the year. They're just nowhere now.
No, it's just very KTM-esque for these guys. Something's not clicking. And I can't work out what it is. I'm sure we'll never actually truly find out.
No, never.
But all we can hope is that they just improve. That's about all we can do. I mean, someone has to fill 12th and 17th.
That's fair.
Their places on the grid. And it just seems like these guys are slotting into those kind of places. And we say it about everyone. Must do better. Want to see them do better. But this is...
But if everyone's doing better, this is still their better. Yeah, exactly.
They can't all be in first. We can't have 22 first place finishers.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone's got to fill that position at the back. So, and
it's the taking part that counts, Steve.
Exactly. It's not the winning. It's the taking part, bollocks. Yeah, this is just starting to feel like a natural position.
Yeah.
So, but we can only hope we're wrong.
Another rider that seems to be slotting into a natural position here, Pol Espargaró, qualified 12th, finished 10th for the factory Repsol Honda there.
I don't really remember seeing him in the race.
We didn't really. No. I saw one shot of him during the race that I noticed because I was like, oh, Marquez has dropped. Oh, no.
Yeah. Not him.
Yeah. But yeah, just I don't know. It's just not a great year for Pol.
No, it's not. Again, or we could just
do better.
Yeah. Much like my school report, must do better. Must try harder.
And a man who did try harder
and
just performed miracles once again is one Marc Marquez there. Qualified third, dominant performance to win the race.
Did you forget, like me, that he'd had an injury during this race?
Nah, because I spent the entire thing waiting for him to crash.
I spent the entire thing just watching him, thinking, you'll start to drop off the pace. That shoulder will start to come into it. It never did.
No.
It just looked like the old Mark.
He did. It was much like the old Mark. It was the winning margin that we'd expect from the old Mark, and it was just sheer dominance. And there was times around that track where he was 0.8 seconds faster than anyone else in the field.
Exactly. This Amazing. Was Marquez...
This was 2019, Marquez.
Yeah, this really was. I was trying to think of a year then where he was like extra dominant.
Every 2019 year, one.
Every year. But yeah, he just looks good. And he's improving. His fitness is coming back. And everyone must be looking at him just thinking, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, quite.
You know, you look at his position in the championship table from what he's been through.
That's a fair point. Where is he sitting now?
I think he's seventh
now. Yeah.
But look at who's behind him. My whole point, how can you come back from that kind of injury, have a year off, and just be crushing it the way he is? What is he on, 117 points?
He's on 117 points. The notable names behind him, bearing in mind these notable names are all race winners. Maverick Viñales, Miguel Oliveira, Jorge Martin, Alex Rins is behind him.
Exactly.
Morbidelli's way behind him, but he had time off. Rossi is obviously way behind him. Yeah, it's... A good recovery, considering the amount of time he missed.
Exactly. You can't knock what he's done.
No, certainly not, man.
I didn't think he'd be anywhere near this level yet.
I mean, I spent a lot of last year saying I didn't think Marquez was ever going to ride again. So the fact he's coming back and he's won two races this year, a lot of guys don't win two races in their entire MotoGP career.
Yeah.
That, it just shows something incredible. But yeah, his first front row start since coming back. This year, he got an amazing launch and then just controlled the pace for five laps and then put the fucking hammer down.
Just went.
Boom. Yeah. He was gone.
He was speaking about his strategy in Parc Fermé on the telly and it was just like perfect.
Exactly. It just went to plan. It went perfectly
just
to plan.
Happened. Yeah. Just everything went well. And great to see him back on the podium again with a donut.
Yeah. What was the donut about? I sort of missed the donut
joke. There was something to do with promised him before the race.
What, if he won, he could have a donut?
Yeah.
I mean, the man can buy himself a fucking donut.
I really hope he bought donuts for everyone.
Oh, that's fair. Okay.
You know, let's face it, if he got a donut, everyone's getting a donut.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it looked like a nice donut as well.
Did it? I thought it just looked like a pretty standard, like, glazed donut.
I like a good donut.
Krispy Kreme fan?
Yeah.
Love Krispy Kreme.
Got to be a Krispy Kreme. I'm hungry.
Yeah, I really want a Krispy Kreme. I don't know if there's... I think there's a Krispy Kreme in Tesco's. I might pop in. I'm not going to pop in on my way back.
I'm out. See ya.
Yeah, you're going, nah, shit.
To put this lot away when you're done too.
I did think, actually, the podium, Steve, for this race, this is what you were referencing earlier.
I didn't realise you put it in there.
Yeah, I did. The podium here, the Marquez Quartararo Bagnaia podium, I did text this to you. I think that's the title battle for next year, those three guys.
I completely agree. Unless someone pops up, like a Raul Fernandez.
On a satellite KTM, geez, can you imagine?
Let's hope, let's live and hope. Something's going to lie, unless somebody else pops up and does something incredible, that they are definitely our title contenders for next year.
Yeah.
100%.
And the exciting thing is, if that becomes the case, Steve, this is going to be a title that is between three manufacturers, not just three different riders.
That's what we
want. It could be three manufacturers.
That is what we need. That is absolutely what we need. We just need a KTM and an Aprilia in there.
Yeah.
Maybe a Suzuki, just a frozen blue in.
That's true. If the Suzuki, the 2022 machine, is the improvement that everyone is telling us it's going to be, that brings Mir and Rins back into it as well. Like, it's exactly. Again, it's going to come to the point, Steve, where we're going to be doing our preview show for next season and we'll be like, honestly, it could be one of 18 guys could win this fucking title.
If it gets to that point, we're going to have to change the format of how we talk about the show. Yeah. Because it would just be like, we can't put these guys last because they did so well.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would just be right. We'll have to go back to like the start of how we used to do it, or we'll just run up the finishing order.
Yeah.
In like, from last to first. Oh dear.
It's going to be an exciting one, mate. But this year's not over, and year the championships are all exciting, as we've
said.
I'm a
little bit gutted. We've got two weekends off. Sorry, I just realised I really cut you off there.
That's fine, Steve. I'm also a bit gutted. We've got two weekends off. The momentum is building, and it's building in all three classes. The championship closed down to just 9 points in Moto2. It's at 30 points now in Moto3, 52 points in MotoGP. The MotoGP title is close to being wrapped up, but it's not over yet, and other two are going to get spicy.
Yeah, they really are. So, yeah, when I forgot it was two weekends, and then I heard it on the telly, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah. Back to Misano for the second of two races there.
Yeah, but we can wait. We've waited longer.
We
can
have.
Do it. We can make it.
We've waited entire summer breaks, or winter breaks before, Steve, and we'll wait entire winter breaks again.
Look how long we waited then.
Good point. That was a long time off.
Oh, my God. Thank you, BT Sport, for keeping us entertained. Massive shout out there. We want some royalties.
Yeah. Steve, let's go through our predictions here for the race. I predicted it was going to be a Miller win, a Marquez second, and a Quartararo third. I also said I wouldn't be surprised to see two Ducatis on the podium. Marquez won, Quartararo finished second. Yes, he did. And obviously Bagnaia was third. So I got two of the three right, not in the right order.
No.
You, on the other hand, Steve, picked Quartararo for the win, Bagnaia for second, Marquez for third. You got all three podium finishers right, just in a slightly wrong order.
That's annoying. That's really annoying. If I could just shuffle Marquez.
Yeah, just from third to first, it will all slot into place, mate. I think that's the closest prediction we've made this year.
I think it is, yeah. I think it is. I can't remember us getting all three podium finishers.
No, I don't think either of us have, so
good
shout from you.
I'm quite chuffed.
Right then, Steve, let's run through the top 10 in the championship quickly. And then that probably brings us to the end of the show, because obviously there's no race next week.
No.
So we'll have a bit of a quiet one. So we'll go through the Fantasy League and stuff then. Just want to say, Steve, I have gained another place in the Fantasy League.
You have, and I've gone down another place.
Oh, brutal.
It's because I put too much stock and faith in people. And I'm going to have to go back. When the season's over, I'm going to go back and look at my team. I'm assuming I could go back and look at the changes that I've made, because I can't recall a race where I've had all four riders finish. So
I certainly have, and in fact, I did last round.
Yeah.
I've been on a few good rounds recently. I wish I had boosts left, though. I misused my boost at the start of the season when I went all in on Miller
and
Qatar.
Mine. I've gone for a big finish.
Yeah,
I want to finish near the 20s. That's not going to happen.
Well, I was looking through. We'll talk about the Fantasy League next week, Steve.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah, we'll just suddenly. We do this. We descend in the chat. Here we go.
The top 10 in the championship in MotoGP then looks like this. 10th place is Miguel Oliveira on 92 points. 6 points ahead of him is Maverick Vinales. And another 6 points ahead of Mav is Aleix Espargaró with 104. Marc Marquez is there in 7th place on 117 points. Brad Binder is one spot above with 131 in sixth place. 10 points ahead of Brad is Johan Zarco in fifth, and then Jack Miller in fourth brings up the first of the two Red Ducatis with 149 points. Johan Mears in third with 175, and the second of the two Ducatis is there in second with 202 points. Fabio Quartararo then is 52 points clear at the top. With 254 points, 75 points left up for grabs, so it's not over, but it's feeling close to done.
It pretty much feels like it's done. I can't see Quartararo giving it away now.
I can't see Quartararo winning this weekend, though. I can't. No, he's not going to win at Misano. Bagnaia will close down points in Misano, but then if Quartararo can win in Portimao, last job done.
Yeah, game over. Absolutely.
That then brings us to the end of the show, guys. Any final thoughts, Steve?
No, just a little bit gutted we got two rounds off. At the same time, it builds the anticipation.
It does.
I quite like it, as well as hate it at the same time.
Yeah.
But that gives me time to speculate, tear my hair out, try not to kill anyone at work.
And I'm going to spend the next 2 weeks trying to work out who I'm going to put in my fantasy squad for Misano.
Yeah.
That's my plan.
I've already done mine.
Have you?
Mm.
Nice.
Even to the point where I've used a boost.
Oh, you're properly committing to it.
I'm going big balls right now.
Nice. Who's your boost on, Steve?
Quartararo.
Oh, you can't get Bagnaia into your squad, can you?
No, I can't. Annoyingly, I was gutted about that because they changed the amounts.
As the race goes on.
Yeah, I was only like 200k away from him. And I was looking, I was saying, fuck's sake, if I shuffle him. But then I realised I can't shuffle him because then that uses up my one...
transfer.
So for God's sake, this was my downfall at the start of the season because I got it completely wrong. It took me five races to get where I wanted to be, and they all stopped. And I had to do it again. So I gave faith to a few who keep crashing.
Yeah. That then, Steve, we will go more into more detail at the Fantasy League next week. But that's the end of the show, guys.
We are there.
If you've got anything you want to say to us, any questions, anything at all, you can find us on.
We are for the... I nearly screwed it up then, did you?
I saw the moment where I was like, I forgot the intro. Let's see if Steve forgets this.
nearly screwed it right up, but I've pulled myself out.
Seamless.
Let's have a go. Edit that bit out. That's not going to happen. We are for the love of MotoGP, and you can find us on Instagram and Twitter, if they work.
Topical.
We like it, yes. Or come and join us on the Facebook community. That is still growing. Conversation is still going nicely. It's all good over there. Come and join us. Come and get involved. Or if you want to drop us a line, we are for the love of MotoGP @gmail.com.
Yeah, and if you want to join the Fantasy League and you haven't already, guys, you can do so. Follow the link in the show notes below. Thank you all very much for listening. We will be back with you next week, and we will speak to you then, guys. Stay safe. Look after each other. Speak to you soon.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Music is by Andrew Greenwood. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.